Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. Our final Three Martini Lunch of the week, since we'll be off celebrating the 4th of July, and we'll have a word about that at the end of the podcast today. But the good political martini today, Jim, comes from Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, and it also comes from his op-ed in the National Review on Tuesday. Paul criticizing President Obama for urging Israel to show restraint in response to the murder of the three Israeli teenagers. Here's what he writes in part. How many times must Israel hear this call? Children are murdered. Please show restraint. Cafes and buses are bombed. Please show restraint. Towns are victimized by hundreds of rockets. Please show restraint while you bury your dead once again. He says, I think it is clear by now Israel has shown remarkable restraint. It possesses a military with clear superiority over that of its Palestinian neighbors, yet it does not respond to threat after threat, provocation after provocation, with the type of force that would decisively end their conflict. But sometimes restraint can work against you. Sometimes you just have to say enough is enough. And his point is that it's time for the U.S. to cut off foreign aid to the Palestinians, particularly in the wake of Hamas once again being welcomed as part of that government. So, Jim, I think a lot of people, when they see the terrorist threat emanating anywhere from the Middle East, that it's not deserving of American dollars, and certainly Hamas has proven that as well.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of gets to the heart of one of the big problems with dealing with the, you know, one, the entire Middle East, but two, this particular aspect of Israel and its enemies. They're not on equal moral footing. And those three teenagers who were killed, one of them had dual citizenship with the U.S. So technically Hamas has killed an American citizen. Hamas is a terrorist group. These guys have never really changed their stripes. Occasionally, that, you know, anytime an organization says, well, we have a political wing and a militant wing, and they're totally, totally separate, be wary. You know, that's kind of a way of working around people's natural moral aversion to working with terrorists. And this is their way of, you know, sure, these lines get a little blurry and fuzzy and all that stuff. But, you know, once you start killing people left and right, once you start blowing up places, I kind of think, you know, you're out of civilized society, and nobody should be sitting down with you and trying to say, oh, how can we meet your demands? How can we give you something of what you want so that we get what we want, which is people to stop dying? And we're kind of left with this, you know, frustrating state of affairs. Now, Obama came out and denounced the killing of these teenagers, but I don't know, are we, you know, like, why are we giving anything to, you know, any portion of the Palestinian Authority that is anything less than 100% denouncing Hamas? If we have to fund the people who are killing people who are our citizens, this is not a region of the world we should be giving any foreign aid to. You know, the first rule is just, you know, don't kill people. Stop funding terrorism. We will not fund the Widows and Orphans Fund if you guys are in the business of creating widows and orphans. You know, it's just kind of marveling that the administration has tied itself into knots where this is considered a controversial proposal.
On to the bad martini now, and the jobs report came out a day early because obviously tomorrow's a federal holiday, and the numbers for June are better than expected. 288,000 new jobs added in the month of June. The overall unemployment rate fell from 6.3 to 6.1%. People saying, hey, this is the best rate since September 2008. However, the labor force participation rate still stagnant at 62.8% for the third straight month. So, Jim, these are probably some of the best numbers we've seen in quite a while, certainly in this administration. But the weird thing, and this could almost qualify as a crazy martini, is that the Democrats are essentially doing cartwheels today for steady-as-she-goes job numbers here. That's slightly better than what we've seen. You've got folks like Brad Woodhouse over at the DNC tweeting that, look, the president's plan is working, from the stimulus to the Affordable Care Act to the car buyback program. If only the Republicans would get on board, think of what else could be accomplished. I'm not sure those are the best three examples to use.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of, on the one hand, you know, 200-some jobs created in a month is a genuinely good number. And by the standards of the past 5 or 6 years, yeah, it really is a really good number. The problem is, historically, that's a pretty good number. And what we really needed to see consistently, month in and month out, for a year or two to make a real serious effort at this. And then, of course, the question is, what kind of jobs are being created? Is wage growth going up? I mean, on polling questions, you ask people how they feel about the economy, the numbers are still pretty, you know, tepid at best, and there's still a great deal of gloom and doom out there. Now, the Dow is hitting 17,000 earlier this week. There's a disconnect there. And my gut instinct is that, you know, I'm not sure the American people are foolish about this. I think that they kind of, they know how their own personal bottom lines are doing. Maybe they're employed, but they're not happy with their job. Maybe they're employed, but they kind of wish they could find a better one, or one that was a little higher paying, or one that was even more flexibility, and they still don't see much of a movement in that. You and I have talked about in the past about the idea of the rise of part-time America and the number of jobs that are being created that are full-time and things like that. So there's kind of this nagging sense that, yeah, this is good news, but we've been in such lousy economic straits for so long that we are treating something that is pretty good as something to be ecstatic over. And I think it says something about how much our lowered expectations have gotten.
They seem to forget that it was just a week or two ago that we learned that the economy shrunk by 3% in the first quarter of this year. So not sure the time for the party hats is busted out yet. But we do like to see better job numbers than expected, and that's certainly what we got in June. But on to the crazy martini now. This report also coming from National Review and The Corner, although it's certainly been reported in other places. Oklahoma Congressman Jim Bridenstine is a member of the House Armed Services Committee. So earlier in the week, he had a meeting with the commanding general at Fort Sill in the state of Oklahoma. While he was there, he discovered that there is a facility that is being used to house illegal immigrant children who have crossed the border in this recent humongous wave. And from there, they get reacquainted with different sponsors somewhere else in the country. And so he wanted to visit this facility. The general decided he didn't want to go. So the congressman goes up to the facility, asks to see it firsthand, and he's told he can't get in and he can't even get a tour until July 21st. Jim, this has come at the same time Fox News is reporting that doctors and nurses aren't supposed to say anything to the press about the type of diseases coming across the border and that sort of thing. So the media blackout on this is very, very disturbing.
It is. And it just, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day. We thought about areas where the left gets very uncomfortable. And very often it's when two of their values get in conflict. And you know, on the issue of immigration, they have a political interest in bringing as many people over here as possible under the perception that you come over here, you give them amnesty, you make them U.S. citizens, and they'll vote Democrats. Alternately, there's also kind of this sense of being able to call their opponents xenophobic and hateful and unreasonable and unhinged and racist and all that kind of stuff. And this flood of children coming over the border kind of puts their values into strange conflict here, because they want to say we're being uncompassionate, but the policy they prefer has just started up this policy that is, you know, ipso facto uncompassionate. It is not a good idea to have lots and lots of kids coming across the border unattended. And unfortunately, I think they found the body of a 11 or 12 year old out in somewhere, I believe it was out in the Southwest recently. Like, this is not a safe thing for children to be doing. And thus we need to be discouraging this. And while the administration fans are saying, oh, this is a result of gang violence and you know, abuse in families. Wait a minute. There's always been gang violence in these countries. There's always been domestic abuse. You know, there wasn't something like somebody turned a dial in the past 6 months and suddenly things got dramatically worse. And in fact, my understanding is in Costa Rica, the congressman was saying last night, is actually crime rates are the same as they were a year ago and the year before that. There hasn't been this dramatic spike. So what changed in the past year? What changed in the past year is, as the discussion about a comprehensive immigration reform has intensified in the United States, coupled with discussion of the DREAM Act and Obama's decision that he's not going to deport those who came here as children, the perception is now in Central America that if you want a better life in America, if you send your kid here, they'll get citizenship. Now, they can say, oh, this is the work of dishonest smugglers. Oh, this is the work of other folks. The rumor mill in these very poor communities is an overdrive. But look, the effect is still the same. Lots of kids coming over here. Along comes a congressman, duly elected, a representative of his citizens, who wants to know what's going on in his district. And these arrogant words I should not use on this podcast are the audacity to say, no, we're not going to let you in here. You're not allowed to. Which is, there's one of two possibilities. One is that the absolute disdain for the legislative branch that the president has shown has now filtered down to the lowest levels, where basically nobody believes they have to cooperate with a Republican congressman on anything. Or the flip side of that, base speculation, Greg, but can you think of any reason why you wouldn't want a U.S. congressman interacting with these kids?
Well, there could be squalid conditions. There could be maltreatment. Who knows what could be going on in there?
Could be all of that. How about communicable diseases?
That too.
You know, look, these folks have been living in very poor conditions, not getting the right kind of medical treatment. We don't know any of this stuff. I think it's safe to say I've heard some people talking about lice and other, unfortunate conditions that kids get. And you know, American kids in the suburbs get lice, too. This is not to say that there's something unique to these circumstances. But in other words, like, we now have people coming over the border with health issues that, one, I'm sure, you know, none of these facilities are really designed to handle. They're all cramped together in these overcrowded locations, which means it's a perfect formula for spreading a disease. And maybe they're terrified of having a U.S. congressman catch something because they were touring these kind of makeshift camps for these kids here. It is an abysmal situation top to bottom, and I don't think the administration realizes just how bad it is. The secrecy is not going to help them in any way, shape, or form. So if I were them, I would be apologizing profusely to this congressman and getting buddy-buddy really fast. The stage is being set for an entire overhaul of U.S. immigration policy in this administration that is, as much as Obama likes to say, well, Congress won't act, so I will. I think, you know, at some point, this is going to reach a point where the Democrats are going to be terrified of this. Concerned that they're never going to win any of these communities ever again, and they're going to need to do something to handle this humanitarian. You know, you cannot have your policies generate a humanitarian crisis on the border and not suffer a consequence at the ballot box.
Yeah, the effects of what's going on down there just get worse and worse and worse. And over the last three martinis, we've talked about problems on the foreign stage, our economy, and now what's going on within our own borders. And so that's a little bit of a depressing way to head into the 4th of July tomorrow and remembering what's so great about America. And I think we got a good reminder of it in the last 24 hours, Jim. The inspiration for the book Unbroken, Louis Zamperini, passed away at the age of 97. Most people know the story because of the great success of the book and the forthcoming movie later this year. He was an Olympian in 1936. That's the Berlin Olympics, a World War II bombardier. Got shot down, spent 47 days in a life raft before being picked up by the Japanese and then tortured for 2 years in a prisoner of war camp. After the war, he became a Christian, went back in 1950 and forgave his captors, and then, of course, became an American hero, and he's been an Olympic torch runner, even in Japan for the Winter Olympics in 1998, and he was obviously the inspiration for this incredible book and was even supposed to be the Grand Marshal of the next Rose Bowl parade that he'll obviously not be able to do, but just an example of a great American and the type of people that America produces because of the great principles on which our nation was founded.
Wow, what an amazing life, Greg. You hear about when, you know, somebody's like, man, their life should be a movie. That guy should have like just a series of movies about his life. And each thing you describe could be a separate chapter of that. It's kind of fascinating. And you know, yes, one of America's best and maybe kind of a role model to all of us of a life well lived.
Absolutely the case. And let's remember, again, the great principles that our country was founded on this weekend and keep fighting to make sure they're still the principles of this country. So, Jim, have a great 4th and we will talk to you on Monday.
Looking forward to it. See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us. Have a great 4th of July, and we'll be back Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.